Mad Sessmat Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Good Thursday. Thanks for being with us. I'm not quite sure what to do tonight. It's Bengals and Browns and Manziel, so that doesn't seem to be an option that's doable for me. I have no fantasy interest in this game either. The college game tonight, it will be good to see Baylor, if nothing more than I can just give Eric crap on tomorrow's show. Because I've not seen Baylor before, like sat there and watched them start to finish. I did see the Suns game last night. I went to James Bond last night. I'll tell you about that experience in a minute. I had a drive-through thing today that went terribly wrong, just terribly wrong, that sent me back, that I think many of you could relate to. I've got to get that into the show. Mike Leach is going to be with us. So we've heard all about this cheating stuff, and I told Eric a week or so ago, we're fans of Coach Leach. When we were at Pac-12 Media Day, we had to race from there over to the NFL Network to see our guy Fabiano. So we didn't get Coach Leach this year, which is, it's fine. He's such an interesting, bizarre character that, and it's the only way to put it, it figures that when the Sheetgate story comes out that ASU is cheating, that they would have to face Mike Leach in the next game. Not some Mr. Beige, not somebody that just doesn't care, not David Shaw. No, they've got to face a guy that who knows what Mike Leach is going to do. So I want to talk to Coach Leach about his view of ASU cheating, and if they are cheats and stealing signals and all that with Mike Leach. That's coming up here in about 15 minutes. Dan Bickley is going to be in studio with us, AZ Central columnist in studio, talking about the Cardinals on the bye week. And ASU, it'll be good to catch up with Dan. And Jake Plummer will join us via Skype from his home in Boulder, Colorado. And I'll talk to Jake about ASU and cheating, Pac-12 Network analyst. I think it's fair to ask Jake about, is it time to start playing Manny Wilkins some? I'm not sitting here saying you're going to bench Mike Bercovici, but is it getting to the point at 4-4? You've got to win two to become bowl eligible. But to me, you have to start looking ahead at 2016 at some point. I mean, if you're losing big, and it may have nothing at all to do with the play out of your quarterback, but if you're losing big on Saturday, why would you not want to put some stuff on tape for Manny Wilkins or Bryce Perkins? Why would you not want to do that? And there comes a point where you just have to say, look, it didn't work out. We're not holding this against you, but we have to do what is best for the program rather than have you out there every week. And you run the risk, though, too, of when you play U of A, and if you've pulled the plug on Burko, you're throwing a freshman out there, and all that is left in this season for both U of A and ASU, there's nothing else redeeming of value in my mind, because going to the Holiday Bowl doesn't cut it. It's great for the kids, but this has been just a terribly disappointing college football season for both U of A and ASU. So going to the Sun Bowl again, going to San Francisco, going to Vegas. If they were to go anywhere that I would say, boy, this is great, it'd be going to San Antonio, and I don't see them getting that high because they haven't been to the Alamo Bowl. I think it's actually a better bowl than some of these others, and they recruit Texas. So if you pull the plug, and I got to talk to Jake about this, is it time to start giving Manny Wilkins some reps? It's very simple. So that's all straight ahead on the show. Of course, the Cardinals are off this week, and the buys come at a perfect time for them. Let me just put it that way. And the Seahawks have a bye this week. And the real season, I believe, starts for the Cardinals in Seattle. The prove me I'm wrong starts for the Cardinals a week from Sunday in Seattle. 8 weeks in, soft schedule, nice results. Lost to two teams that are better than them in some areas. Coach challenges star defensive linemen. Star defensive linemen cannot do anything about it except sit and stew. Hey, Eric, you're not very good at producing. You're going on vacation for 2 weeks, and we need you to do a better job. You're not going to go get on the plane or the cruise and feel really good about your boss. You're not going to feel very good at all about your working situation because you've been called out and there's nothing you can do about it for 2 whole weeks. Put yourself in Calais Campbell's shoes. And is that Bruce Arians' way of motivation? And for a guy like Calais, is it, as Seth Joyner told me yesterday here in studio, is it a guy like Calais that can handle that sort of being called out?
And I wonder, Brad, if Arians is looking to see more effort, not just on Sundays, but during the week in practice. Is this something where better practice equals better performance in games? I mean, is that why he set that salvo out Monday, like you said, almost 2 weeks before the Cardinals take
the field? I mean, Calais has got to just sit around for 2 weeks. And then when he does get off the boat or get off the plane or get off whatever it is that he's been doing, he has to walk back into that facility, or has he taken this whole 2 weeks after that challenge and said, you know what? Because they do need more out of him. There's no question. And Dwight Freeney's got to start showing up. And Seattle's offensive line is not the greatest offensive line. Russell Wilson has had to run for his life this year. So it only makes sense to challenge him, the game being at Seattle. I would say right now the Cardinals are not going to win that game, as I'm sitting here a week from, 10 days away from the game, but got a long time to kick that around. I saw a little bit of the end of the Suns game. If DeMarcus Cousins doesn't play, then it's fine. You get a win, and every player scored, and the Kings are on a back-to-back without DeMarcus Cousins. You know, yeah, I'm going to nitpick. I'm not here with pom-poms to cheerlead every day. When there's times to say, hey, this team's playing really well, I think it carries more weight than, wow, man, they're 3-1. They're off to a great start. They beat Portland, who doesn't have LaMarcus Aldridge anymore. It's basically Damian Lillard against the world. They beat Sacramento in a back-to-back without DeMarcus Cousins. My guy Keefe actually played some last night, did some things last night. You know, I'm the head of the Markieff Morris Get Out of Town Club. But as long as he's here, my guy Keefe, Eric Bledsoe had 19, Brandon Knight 17, Alex Len 16. So they get a win. The Coyotes are back at it tonight. The Coyotes story, it was like two, three months ago, I wrote something about how the Coyotes were flirting around with Talking Stick, and Talking Stick Resort over in Scottsdale by the Diamondback Spring Training Facility was kicking around ideas. They had some plans laid out of an arena for the Suns and some other sports entities that would play there. The Coyotes this week, I saw they sent a release out that they've hired a consultant. Those who can do, those who can't consult. Pretty simple. And if you're a consultant, you know I'm right. It's a great way to make a living, but do. So they're telling them where, and especially in media. Yeah, we have to get a consultant here. You cannot figure it out for yourself, huh? Okay, got it. So they're playing on the ice. That doesn't really matter to me. It's very apparent they're not going to play at Glendale 2 years from now. So what do they have to do, and where are they going to go? Are they going to share a building with ASU hockey? Would that seem too minor league? Are they going to share a building with the Suns that is about a mile south of where the Suns arena is right now, coming up against I-17 in downtown? Is that a possibility? The city of Scottsdale going to try to figure something out. So while they're doing their thing on the ice, and they're played better this season. Yeah, they played better this season. The real story with the Coyotes is going to be, now that they've got this guy in place, there'll be legal salvos, there'll be PR mixed messages. I saw where Rich Nairn, who's terrific at what he does, he retweeted a story last week by Pierre LeBrun of ESPN about the Coyotes looking at other options. So, I mean, you have employees within the organization that are retweeting national stories saying that we're getting out of Glendale. They're not coming back to Glendale. Let's just be honest here. So that's caught my eye, too. Okay, on the other side, Mike Leach, Washington State head coach. Is ASU cheating? What does he make out of ASU cheating? What does he see in the Sun Devils coming up to Pullman in their game on Saturday afternoon at 1:30? Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic AZ Central Sports. I'm Brad Sussmat.
Like our Facebook fan page for unique Arizona sports content from the high schools to the pros. Facebook.com/Sports360AZ.
We have Mike Leach with us, ASU at Washington State at Pullman on Saturday. I am going to get to the game, Coach. I appreciate you coming on, but I guess we have to start with bed sheets and stealing signals.
Yeah, you know, I got to be honest. I'm kind of the man in the middle on this, really. You know, since we're playing Arizona State, you know, all of a sudden I get asked about this. And, you know, it hadn't have been an issue in our game, but evidently it was an issue in the Utah game. It was evidently an issue in the Oregon game, to the point where they had special screens made to cover things up. And then, well, of course, they asked me about it. And it's been an issue in the other two games. So I figured that Arizona State would just, be forthcoming on the thing and either stop stealing signals. And then, of course, they admitted they do steal signals. And they're right about one thing. I mean, people try to eyeball signals as long as it's legal. I mean, that's the way it is, you know. But I don't know. It's been an issue in the other two games. And so I'm just the next one down the line. Hopefully it's not an issue in our game.
How can it be an issue? I mean, can you tell as the game progresses? Give the fans an idea on this, because fans are somewhat confused. It's like this has gone on since football started or baseball started. Stealing signals, is it part of the game or is it not the right thing to do?
I guess it probably sort of varies. I mean, you have extreme lengths, they had that deal with the New England Patriots where they're videotaping things and stuff like that. And there is some legislation and rules on videotaping. And I don't know if they videotape or not, and I can't really say what Oregon or Utah's thoughts on that might be, especially, but based on the fact that those were the games where they had issues. But, there are some rules that prohibit certain elements of it, yeah, for sure. But I don't know to what extent Arizona State does it or how they go about it. I imagine those are deeply guarded secrets in the bowels of the Sun Devil lair, but I think that there is this about it. If you're concerned enough to put barriers up or something like perhaps they ought to look at it. I don't know, but I think unless I take part in putting barriers up, somebody else probably ought to lead the charge on this thing.
Well, and we were having kind of fun at it, saying I don't know what color bed sheets that Mike Leach would put up or if he's going to do that this week, if he's got to send assistants out. And I'm kind of looking at it like if there is something out there and coaches are trying to protect their signals, I get it. But to what extent will we see on Saturday? Have you talked it over with your staff?
Not a great deal. We've kind of been at it for a long time and doing stuff somewhat similar, so. Not a whole lot, and we haven't spent a lot of time messing with it. But and I'm sure that Arizona State has a great deal of integrity, and if they've stepped over the line, I'm sure they'll correct any mistakes they may have made.
Yeah, for Todd to say, do we steal signals? Yes, we do. Do people steal our signals? Yeah, they do. Is he right about that, Coach?
I don't know. I've never stolen any of their signals. He could be. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if he is. I mean, he'd know better than anybody whether they steal signals, whether somebody else steals their signals. I'd suspect they try or maybe have stumbled onto it from time to time, would be my guess, yeah.
All right, so on the field, let's talk about on the field. You have a terrific quarterback that we saw earlier this year down in Tucson. And you have your high-powered octane offense at Washington State. What has gone right for you this season to be in the position you're in?
We're not in any real relevant position. We just have the opportunity to play a game, from one week to the next. But we've developed as a team. We've kind of evolved as a team. We're a very young team, and so we started out with. I thought a really good off season where everybody worked together hard, and then we got to where we had quite a bit of individual effort, that type of thing. And then as time's gone on, we're starting to play pretty good as a team. So we just need to keep working that and developing that.
What do you see out of ASU, Coach?
They're always quick. ASU's always kind of a quick team. You know what I mean? I don't know the best. Some people say they're flashy. And I don't know what that means exactly, but they are quick. They just seem like you watch them and all of a sudden, in both sides of the ball too. you know, there's just sort of a quickness to them. And that's true this year, too.
Mike, appreciate the time and the visit as always. Thanks. Good stuff there from Mike Leach. Appreciate his time. All right, so there's the Washington State side. When I'm caught in the middle of all this, I'm just cannot wait for Saturday afternoon, because at some point in the game on Saturday, at some point, hang on a second. Here we go. Stuff happens. At some point in the game on Saturday, he is going to do something. And then there's always the post-game handshake. You know, what's that post-game handshake going to look like between Todd Graham? How is it going to be this upcoming offseason, assuming Mark Helfrich is still at Oregon? And I'm not throwing him under the bus, but look, they have not had a good year, and the people at Oregon aren't happy, and they weren't happy a year ago. So what are those Pac-12 meetings at the Biltmore where they go play golf and they all walk through the lobby together? You know, Eric, those really nice, fun, easy meetings, what are those going to be like this year? When they're behind closed doors, you guys call me a cheater. You such and such, such and such, such and such.
Leach was funny because he, in typical, like, Leach is a lawyer. So, literally, he is.
No, he is.
He
yeah.
is a lawyer.
Yeah. He's written books.
And he's, yeah, he's into Pirates. So,
he's
I mean,
everywhere.
Everything's going to be, like, just a little bit off-centered.
Yeah.
But there's always going to be, when you look back, like, wow, that made a lot of sense, what he just said. I mean, the best, you know, one of the funniest lines was, I don't know to what extent ASU does or does not or how they do it. It's a part of Sun Devil Lair, of course. I mean, like, what other head coach in the Pac-12 would quote it quite like that? Only Mike Leach.
Only Mike Leach. So are we regretting now you not going to Pullman? I'm not, but you may be.
No, I mean, I would have been fine either way.
Because the storyline is now, it's not about ASU trying to stay alive for a big-time bowl game. I mean, this game, you know, at the end of the day, this will be a nice game to watch on a Saturday afternoon. If you're interested in ASU, if you're interested in Washington State and Mike Leach, you want to see what Luke Falk does. But when Washington State is out on the field, I want to see what they're doing across the field to try to hide their signals. I want to see if Fox Sports 1, who's broadcasting the game, and of course is a media partner with the Pac-12 Conference, if they're going to just shy away from this. They'll say, oh, yeah, we cover this. Did they really cover this inside now?
If I were with you standing on the sideline at Camp T, and I said, we're going to be heading into early November, and the biggest storyline around ASU football is going to have nothing to do with playoffs, Pac-12 South Championships,
are there
undefeated
cheaters?
Season.
Yeah.
Are they stealing signs from other teams at 4-4?
And
wow.
And, you know, I keep
so
saying, are they cheaters? And I keep saying, are they cheaters? To me, it's gamesmanship. I just look, if you're coaching basketball, right, and I'm coaching my team and I say thumbs down means get the ball into the low post. If I say one, that's high post pick and roll. If I say red, that's man to man. If I say white, it's zone. If I say 100 red, that's full court press. If I say 100 white, it's full court zone press. If I say special, it's a 1-3-1. So if I'm coaching and the guy that's coaching down for me hears me say one, like the third time high pick and roll, and the point guard calls out one and they don't go to cover it, then they're just not paying attention. So if I'm up in the, if I'm in the booth in football and I've got my binoculars and I see, like we talked about earlier in the week, the big placards that have a duck, a mouse, a Taco Bell sign, and something else. And that they, when they put that up, that means they're doing this.
It's hard, though. I mean, even then, you have four, like on Thursday, Oregon had four quarterbacks or redshirt guys or whatever, and they're all signaling in plays.
Sure.
I mean, which one of those four is actually, and the quarterback's just looking over the sideline, so you can't tell where exactly he's looking. So you, what do you do? Take your chances? Like, all right, well, it's the second quarterback from the left. That's the real play.
And just because Todd Graham knows Bill Belichick, I'm not going to make that leap. I'm not going to say that the two of them sat around and said, well, this is how you do it. I'm not going to do that.
Okay, don't.
I don't know. I don't know to the extent that he knows Bill Belichick. You know, I don't know that. I mean, I know Seth Joyner. I haven't seen him in 3 years, and he comes in studio with me yesterday. It doesn't mean I can get everything inside and out of him. Just because you say you know somebody, how intimate really is that relationship?
Coaches talk.
Coaches can talk, but
coaches talk.
I don't know the extent of it. Do I have any problem with ASU doing this? No, but it adds on to their season. If you think of everything that's gone on in ASU this year, I know we got a break here, but you go back to Pac-12 Media Day when we had Todd on, best team ever, and we're sitting there at Universal Studios and we're hearing about best team ever.
Best ASU team ever.
Best ASU, yeah.
Let's be specific here.
Best ASU team ever.
I gotcha.
And then right before the season starts, Bo Graham leaves the program for better opportunities. Okay. And then you go through the way that they lost games and how they lost games and things that have happened during the course of this year where they haven't used DJ Foster, in my opinion, the right way. And maybe he's been hurt. This just adds on to what has been a strange, bizarre, uncomfortable in certain ways type of season. It just has. Because Ray has come in here trying to get the momentum of the stadium, and both Todd and Ray have talked about how they're giving money to the stadium and all that stuff. But the fan base this year has felt slighted. There's no other way to put it. My inbox is not the same 10 guys that are over and over. This is corporately, there's people that are not happy about it. And in this competitive marketplace, next year's home schedule is going to have Texas Tech, UCLA, Utah, of games that are of value, of games that are a note. They're not going to draw fans here in big numbers. They don't have U of A here next year. The rest of their home schedule is nothing that I think is going to bring fans down here in big numbers. So they're gonna take a hit next year at the gate as they're trying to put the stadium project through. That's why the U of A game for ASU, as I'm sitting here right now, the U of A game is a bigger game for ASU than it is for U of A, because I think Rich is gone. Rich is going to be gone, and there's going to be a clean slate there. And Todd's got to live with it if they don't beat ASU in a couple of weeks, because there's still some of those people.
Well, they beat U. If they beat U of A, it's a successful year. I don't
buy into that. I'm Brad Sussmat. All right, let's talk all things football around the state of Arizona with columnist Dan Bickley from AZ Central. Long time looking at the Arizona Cardinals, Arizona State, all sports for that matter. So, halfway mark of the season. Pretenders, contenders, Cardinals.
Who are you talking? Cardinals. I think they're contenders, but I think they have issues. They've done enough, Brad, in the games that they've won to make you think they could run this table if they get hot in January. They've also done enough with red flags to make you wonder, can this team sustain against good teams throughout a postseason grind? I think defensively, they've got problems up front. The one thing they do not have that defensive player who can disrupt a game plan, who can get into the backfield, who can consistently beat his guy off the ball. They don't have him. So they have to manufacture pressure. They haven't been able to manufacture pressure the way they did under Todd Bowles. And I think when you heard Bruce Arians this week, kind of criticize and single out Calais Campbell, That's what he was getting at. He was looking at Calais and saying, I need you to be Reggie White. I need somebody to get back and harass that quarterback.
Poke and prod.
You're the only chance I got, and you're not getting it done for me. That, to me, is the one thing that could hold this team back. That guy up front that can destroy a game plan and intimidate an opposing quarterback.
So you and I think we're on the same alignment here in reading you in the Republic and hearing you on your radio show on KTAR. This is a window. This window is closing. And I look at Calais and Bruce singling him out, and fans are saying, boy, I can't believe, Brad, he was so critical of one of his star players. That's been Bruce Arians.
Yes.
I mean, Bruce is not afraid of anybody. So if we'll go from Calais then over to Carson, he's got to play a few more years. I mean, the way he's going this season, it's like Brady says, I'll play 10 more years. I keep saying, who's the replacement for Carson? But maybe I'm too far out in front on that one. Where are you at on Carson?
Well, no, I think you're right. I think if you look at Tom Brady, when he says he wants to play 10 more years, that's like you can envision something like that happening because he doesn't get hit. He gets rid of the ball immediately. Bruce Arians' quarterbacks throw the ball downfield. They take a lot of hits in the pocket. Carson Palmer has endured very well this year, but he's been knocked around a little bit. So him staying healthy for 3, 4, 5 years, I don't know. I think you bring up a very big long-range question for this team. What is their succession plan at quarterback? We all love what we're seeing from Carson Palmer right now, but who's the guy behind door number two? Who's going to take over when he's gone? They don't have that guy. I think Carson Palmer is a great story because he has never won a playoff game. Everybody seems to agree he is a top five quarterback in the NFL at the moment. But how is he going to respond to that kind of pressure? He hasn't done it yet. And until he does, there's always going to be that burden of proof on his shoulder.
Well, and they haven't played anybody, Dan. I mean, if you look at their pillow soft first half of the season schedule, and Carson's taken some hits, and we've seen the inconsistency. Doesn't matter if it's the Steelers game or the defense took them lightly. Doesn't matter if it's last week in Cleveland when you're there and we're watching them just kind of kick the ball around. I'm still jury's out on my end of things. I think the schedule's going to pick up quite a bit. And if he takes one big hit, yeah. I think we're sitting here talking about window closing a little bit more. Let me ask you about Arians, though. So you covered D'Antoni. You've covered Wiz. You've covered some very likable or unlikable figures. I bring up D'Antoni because I see some of Bruce in terms of lovability from the community. Mm-hmm. Not everybody like Mike, okay? What do you see in Arians in terms of likability, coverability, in terms of best you've had here?
You know, he's about as good as they get. He doesn't indulge the media the way D'Antoni did. D'Antoni really wanted to please the media. I don't think Bruce Arians wants to please us. He doesn't care. Yeah. I think Bruce likes when he gets on a roll. If he's in a press conference situation, I think he likes dropping a swear word every now
Tough
and again.
Tough bleep on John Brown. That was great.
You know, he does that, and every cameraman is like, oh, man, you just ruined my shot. But and I think he loves doing that kind of stuff. What fascinates me about this, you brought up Ken Wisenhunt. At one point in time, he was as popular here as anybody.
In Wiz we trust.
In Wiz we trust. Mike D'Antoni was beloved in the Valley, and eventually both those guys hit the wall with teams that failed, and their reputations locally really plummeted. Mm-hmm. Is that going to happen to Bruce Arians? Or is Bruce going to keep his run short enough where he is going to be beloved until the end of his time?
Right.
I think Mike D'Antoni, when you looked at Mike D'Antoni and Ken Wisenhunt, both those guys were very stubborn in their approach. Mm-hmm. I think Bruce Arians is really smart. I don't think the success he has had in the last 3 years is a fluke, so I don't think this town is necessarily going to turn on him. The Cardinals just need to keep the synergy going between their GM and their head coach. To me, it's the secret of everything.
Where are you at on ASU?
Terrible, horrific disappointment. They entered the season with as much promise as I can ever remember. The expectations, the hype, the fact that Coach Todd Graham...
Best team ever.
And he pounded that into our ears for months and months and months. It created a level of expectation that this football team has obviously failed to meet. And I think they're dealing with the repercussions of that right now. I've got some questions about this program going forward. I don't necessarily like the fact that they have a system on offense that seems to require a Taylor Kelly spread offense type quarterback.
Sure.
They have not utilized DJ Foster the way they should. I've seen some inflexibility from this offensive system that I don't think befits a championship program. I think you need to recruit a better level quarterback. I think you need to be able to bring in a pocket quarterback and throw the ball downfield at some point in time. I don't know if this offensive coordinator will allow that. But the point is, I think people have to remember, as horrible as these disappointments are, this program is moving forward. You and I know that this idea of ASU as a sleeping giant, we don't know about that.
It's a mirage.
It's a mirage. Until Todd Graham gets a renovated football stadium, I don't think you can judge what kind of recruiting job he is doing. He is not selling a full program.
It's kind of like the Cardinals back in the day.
Exactly.
You know, the Cardinals were in Sun Devil Stadium. You know,
exactly.
People did not buy in. All right. You've been great. Now, Dan is a musician, and we have a clip that we want to put up of Whiskey's Quicker. We like to find out about what guys are all about. So where did this come from?
Yeah, this is funny you should ask this. Back in my teenage years, I hung around a lot of musicians, and my goal was always to be in a rock and roll band. And then, like most people, I got serious, and I decided to get on a career path, and I got into journalism, and I put my guitar in a closet, and it stood there for about 25 to 30 years. And about 5 years ago at a party, a buddy of mine got on a drum kit, and we started just messing around.
Just jamming.
And the itch started, and I said to myself, okay, you know, this is going to look like a midlife crisis for a guy in his mid to late 40s to start a rock and roll band, but it's the one thing I've always wanted to do in my life, and I never did it. So I said to myself, I got to try this, or I'm going to grow old and die and be unhappy that I never gave this a shot. It's one of the coolest things I've ever attempted. It's nothing but a hobby, but it is such a great release. And I've gotten to meet so many great creative people and great musicians. It's just been a blast.
Yeah. It is a creative release. I mean, if you guys think that sitting at games, writing, talking, writing about games all day long, we can do more than that. We can do more than that. Thanks for coming in.
You're the best, Brad. Thank you, brother.
Thank you. Jake Plummer joins us now via Skype from his home in Boulder, Colorado. I just spoke with Mike Leach about the cheating and everything, and he said, hey, I'm kind of between a rock and a hard place. I'm the guy that people are asking about because Arizona State is coming here on Saturday. Stealing signals and all that stuff, Leach said that there's concern about it. Where are you on all of this?
You know, if that's what's been happening for, you know, all these years and I was unaware of it, then I guess we just let it go. But part of me feels that if you look at, you know, as things keep coming out and, you know, the game, I think it was Utah, whatever, they changed their signals up, or was it USC, whoever, in the fourth quarter and exploded on the defense at ASU, then there's obviously there's benefits from stealing signals. And there would be. If I was playing quarterback and we had a play called and you knew what defense was coming, that'd be really a big advantage on the field. Now, you still have to go make the play. You still have to block your guy. You still have to throw it, catch it, run it, all that stuff. But it does give you an advantage when you know what's coming, what to expect. I like just calling a play and going. I don't know. You know, all this signal stealing, all this stuff seems to be, you know, Oregon exposed ASU. And are they the only team in college football stealing signals? Highly doubtful. So whatever comes of this, you know, it's good. I think it's all fair play. Everybody should have a fair play, be able to play on the same surface and same, you know, par with everybody, whether you're stealing signals or not. If you are, then you shouldn't be allowed to if the other team is. And I don't know. It's a lot of speculation about something that I think can determine a success for a team. And we'll see if there's anything done by the NCAA. We'll see. And obviously it's out there. We're talking about it. So that a good thing, you know, if ASU keeps winning and they can't steal signals, then great. If they're losing and they can't steal signals, then that's not so good.
Yeah, that's my point. If they're stealing signals, they're not doing it very well. So, and I don't mean that, you know, disrespectfully. It's like, do a better job. And then there's the whole, it's Mike Leach. If there's any coach in America, Jake, like Saturday, I'm fully expecting Coach Leach. And he actually said to me at the end of the interview, hey, if you have any ideas on how we can get around this against ASU, call me by Friday. You know, he's wacky enough to do something in the game at Pullman Saturday that's going to have people shaking their head across the country. That's just who Mike Leach is, right?
Yeah, he's a unique guy. He's definitely a rare bird when it comes to coaches. From my understanding and talking with guys at the Pac-12, like Yogi Roth, who is really in-depth with these guys, he says that the players, they love Mike Leach because he's just so brash and he doesn't pull any punches. He speaks the truth no matter what. If he thinks you're garbage, he's going to tell you you're garbage. If he likes you, he'll tell you he likes you. Doesn't pull any punches. And I think that's refreshing in college football, and especially for the players. And you know what they're doing right now, they're playing a really confident ball right now up there at Washington State. And I would watch out anybody going up there because that's a tough place to play.
Okay, so let's talk then about on the field. Luke Falk. So there are a lot of quarterbacks that we kick around and talk about, but this guy is leading the Pac-12 in a lot of categories. Really tough matchup Saturday for ASU.
Definitely. You got to stop them, and it's not easy because last week, I think with the missed field goals by Washington State and all the field goals they had to settle for, I wouldn't be surprised if weather permits that Washington State doesn't even try field goals. So, you know, you got to stop them when they get into that zone, you know, 40-yard line or so. You got to stop them on four downs, and that's where this team can be so dangerous. You know, when they beat Oregon, they pulled out a lot of great third and longs, fourth down plays to continue drives. So the ASU's hands are full. In the back end, you got to cover guys. You're gonna give up some completions. That's fine. Just tackle the guy when they get the ball. Tackle him, get him down. That's the key on defense, and hopefully – you know, Falk doesn't get too hot and you don't have any busted coverages. You got to stop their run game now. They definitely have a threat back there with those three guys running the ball. They can run the ball now, so you have to, you know, pay attention to the run game. And not only the run game, but the quick little screens and dump offs. So ASU's hands are full on defense. You know, other side of the ball, ASU, if they can commit to the run game and get that going, get on your guy, block the guy you're supposed to, create some holes for Balazs and Richard, I think things can happen for ASU also. But it's going to be, who knows what happens in the Palouse. It's a crazy place right. to play. Never know with weather. You know, could always be a factor there, but it's going to be a really live game because Washington State is real confident right now and Arizona State's coming in there wounded.
If you're ASU, you've got to win two of your final four just to become bowl eligible. It's been that type of season. When does Todd Graham start to look at Manny Wilkins? And I don't mean in disrespect towards Berkovici, but this is just, hey, we got to start looking at 2016. Where do you come down on that?
You know, I think that with a senior that's paid his dues and stayed loyal to the program, that you really don't do that. You leave Burko in there. You let him lead this team and let him continue on. I really don't think you get much for building for next year by doing that. That's not the way I think. That's not how I would want to, as a player. I think Burko deserves the right to continue to start. Now, if he struggles and the offense isn't doing what they're supposed to, okay, if you're getting beat real bad, yeah, throw in Wilkins or Perkins or whatever it is. Get those guys in there to get them some reps. But you can't think ahead. If you're trying to clinch a bowl game, you can't think two out of four. You got to think one game. That's all you got to win. That's Washington State. And it's not going to be easy up there. So they got to get focused in on what's happening right now, this week, not even think about anything past this, you know, even today, right now. It's 10 o'clock almost down there in Tempe. Think about whatever you're doing right now, practice, whatever rep that is, back to one at a time and get focused on just that. That's it. That's the way they're going to pull out, hopefully, a successful end of this season.
What do you make out of Anu Solomon and Randall and Rich Rod's team just folding up at Washington? I think it's going to be very tough for them to make a bowl game at USC, home to Utah. And ASU, it's been a really disappointing season, I think, and Rich's name is swirling around a lot of jobs. What's your view of U of A right now, Jake?
You know, it's tough. I think that having Scooby Wright injured early in the year just was a hard thing for that team to overcome. He was their heart and soul, their leader, the guy that was just raised the level up so high for all around that whole stadium and that team and on the field. Tough to lose a player and not have him healthy, but irregardless, you got to have guys that fill in and still, you know, stay true to the plan. They're, you know, whatever happened in Washington, I think Washington's a pretty darn good team. They're playing really well on defense. They do good things on offense. They're not turning the ball over. They do a really good job, and they're starting to buy into Peterson's system there. U of A, I don't know. You know, I'm not down there, so I can't tell you the feeling in the locker rooms and in the weight room and all that stuff. But if Rich Rod's name's circling around, that can't be good for players who, I always say, you know, it's tough when these coaches move. They preach commitment and staying loyal and doing what we need to do for this program. But when a suitor calls with a little better offer, the coaches are the first ones that jump ship and really set a bad example for these young kids. So tough to say exactly what's happening down there. You know, I don't like to see the Arizona schools struggling. I was hoping for a U of A, ASU, you know, undefeated or with right. one loss or two losses. But, yep. Hey, it's the way it's going. And I'm really just hoping to see ASU bounce back and play tough, good, tough, solid football against Washington State and hopefully get out of Palouse with a win.
Okay, I'll leave you with this. This is an enormous weekend, and I think from moving forward here that the big games are coming. Alabama, LSU, Clemson, Florida State. You look at nationally what's going on. Who are your best two, four teams? If you want to go through the whole playoff, the first rankings came out. What do you see, Jake?
You know, it's hard to say. I can't imagine, you know, Clemson as the number one, but I guess if the selection committee feels they deserve that ranking, then that's where they're ranked. You know, we saw last year the rankings changed tremendously. You know, Ohio State, I think at this point, was 16th. And then you look at what they did, and then they were national champs. So, you know, it's all a matter of what happens from here on out. I like that they haven't come out with the rankings until now, because now we see the teams that really are having big wins and have had some good wins and are getting better. But college is just wacky. It's going to be fun to see who goes down and who moves up. I'm looking, hopefully, for Stanford to continue winning. I'd love to see a Pac-12 team in that talk and in the playoffs. And I'd love to see a Stanford team led by Hogan, who's playing extremely good football right now. What he did last week, taking over that game with his legs when they were struggling and throwing the ball in the rain. I mean, that was just an awesome performance by him. And you never know what Christian McCaffrey's going to do. Yep. They got a good one. You know, I wouldn't say easy, but they got one they should win this weekend against Colorado. And hopefully they can just not get that team that has nothing to play for except to ruin their season. But tough to say what's going to happen. There's some great games. It's fun every weekend, college football. They've got us all intrigued and watching, and we'll see how it shakes out.
See you next week. Thanks for the visit.
Hey, right on, Brad. Have a good one.